And one more, and we are recording. Again, September 24th, 2010, Pam Jacobson, J-A-C-O-B-S-O-N, interviewed by Pat Kalshina. And let's give your date of birth one more time, Pam.
11-3-1956.
So why don't we start with when you came to Madison and why you came to Madison, or were you born in Madison?
No, there aren't that many people I know that were born in Madison, but I went there to go to school, like a lot of people. And so after my 5 years.
And what year was that when you began college?
I was, 74, I graduated from high school.
Okay.
So I was 17. And turned 18 shortly after I got to college. And I had my degree was in psychology. Near the end of my time, I wanted to get my degree because it was starting to go on longer than 4 years. So I kind of thought about changing my major because everybody told me you're not going to be able to get a job with a psych degree. And I was getting a little worried about what I was going to do. So I decided not to change my major, though, because it would take me even longer. But I started taking some women's studies classes because I had a lot of, I had some credits that were just elective. So I took women's studies classes and I was like, wow, these are great. And one of the classes that I took was called Education and Sex Role Socialization. It was actually cross-listed. It was a class cross-listed with the curriculum and education, I think, department. And so I have to take him out. I'm really sorry.
Okay, we'll just stop for a second.
I'm sorry.
And so you had taken a class.
Yeah, I got advised about going to this class. It was called Curriculum and Instruction, I believe, or Ed Policies. But whatever, it was cross-listed with Women's Studies, and I didn't really know that at the time. But the class, it was called Education and Sex Role Socialization, and my mind got blown day by day because I was like, are you serious? They duped us. Women into thinking we only had these roles and we could only do this or that. And I was very traditional. Like, I mean, I was a little wild, but I was just, you know, I looked traditional with long hair. I got up every morning, put a bunch of makeup on and not tons, but you know, wore, you know, these cute clothes and stuff and got ready every day for school. And if you would have looked at me through that class, you would have seen me change, like just even how I looked. Like,
wow,
my hair went back in a braid at first, it was long, and then my clothes were more simple. I would get up, you know, a little later because I'd think, well, this is just something women are told they have to do. I don't have to do this, I can just look natural, more natural, and have it be easier. Mm-hmm. Not have another hour and a half every morning getting ready with makeup, you know, blah blah blah. Well, and there was a lesbian in that class. And I didn't even know any lesbians, but I just was like fascinated by her. And she was kind of butchy, but I would just watch her. Like once she asked me to borrow a pencil or something, I was like, oh, I lent a pencil to a lesbian, you know, like really funny.
Wonderful.
And so once in a while we talk about lesbians, just because usually in the women's studies classes, I think the teachers did get the lesbian issues in there.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, even if it didn't quite fit, but, and you know, I'd look at her and I don't know how, if she said she was a lesbian or how I knew that, but because it wasn't just because I had the radar or anything, but so my mind was just, like, it just got opened up like, wow, you know, and she was kind of, you know, a little butchy stereotype, you know, so I thought, okay, so lesbians are like that, but I was like, well, why couldn't anyone just be a lesbian? You know, I was involved with a man at that point, and it was a good relationship. And I'd had good ones and just okay ones. But I thought, wow, that's an interesting idea. Like, just to actually be with a woman. But that's all I thought about it. But then I was taking a bunch of women's studies classes because I could, and they were fascinating. So, and but then I knew they were women's studies, not just cross-listed.
Uh-huh.
101, 102, 103, and then all these other ones. They didn't have a major at the time. By the time I graduated, I worked on a committee at the Women's Studies Building. That's where why we saw each other to begin with one time, because I was at a meeting or something at the Women's Studies Building. And it was for getting a certificate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to say, what kind of requirements should there be? What do the other places do to have a certificate? And so then I was into it, like getting all the stuff for the certificate. But I love those classes. Oh my gosh, they were fascinating. To me, it felt like it was filling all the holes in my education. Plus, I was interested in, like, I wasn't interested in like regular history because it was about wars and I just couldn't keep it in my mind. But I loved to hear about women in history or women in art. That was a great class too.
Uh-huh.
I don't even know the title anymore. It was too long ago. But just all of them, the women and their bodies and health and disease, fabulous class.
Mm-hmm.
All
mm-hmm.
those teachers were there. There was really no teacher that I didn't think was great.
Mm.
You know, some weren't maybe as feminist if they were more into their other field, but mostly they were just phenomenal. And so it was good. Good quality and learning about consciousness, not just to women's studies credit, not just in the area of women, but in all the isms,
mm-hmm.
racism mm-hmm. and all the connections and just great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of when I graduated, which ended up being 5 years rather than four, I had my certificate also in women's studies. And then down the road later, I went back. Once there was a major, I went back to finish up a couple more classes so that I would actually have a major in women's studies on my transcript.
Okay.
And so that, I don't just have psychology, but I have psychology and women's studies. Because in 1979, but I don't know when I got the extra, maybe like early 80s, I was a firefighter by then when I went back to school. That was cool to me to mm-hmm. have that, say, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. women's studies, or to know I had the major requirements as well.
Well, when you graduated from college, did you already know you were going to go into firefighting then?
Not at all.
Okay.
I was, well, then it came true. What am I going to do now that I have this major in psychology and women's studies? What am I going to do? And so I was... First, my parents' gift to me for my college graduation was to go to Europe. A certain amount of money so I could go to Europe. So my friend and I were going to hitchhike. Well, near the end of college, I was in a class and I sort of got a crush on a woman. But I was involved with a man, so it was kind of messy. Well, I did things kind of messy at that time anyway. But that woman, I was kind of, I thought, what's this really going to be like? It's one thing, because I remember distinctly, I was writing notes, and I was writing down like picture, like drawings, doodlings, and it was like, women with men, women, it was like, wow, I could be with both. That's kind of cool, to not just have to choose, but I had never been with a woman, so... And this other woman that I kind of had this little crush on, she also hadn't been with anybody, but we would talk about it a lot. Like, you know, and then we realized, well, we kind of have an attraction, but were we really lesbians? I mean, we'd taken a lot of classes by then. She was kind of similar. She'd taken a lot of classes. And so we got involved, and I remember thinking, this is great. I like being with a woman. Yeah, huh. So... It was like I just decided why, as a feminist, I wanted all my energy to go to women, even my intimate energy. Now, I look back and think, you know, I'm probably just on the continuum. I can go a broad range. I don't know that everybody can, or, you know, just in deep in them, they might be very heterosexual feeling or very lesbian feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But I could easily see the whole range. And so it was more like, what was it going to be like, you know? And it was great. And this particular woman was so different because the men I was with before that, the last few men, they were these big guys, tall, really muscular, not just even normal, but weightlifter guys. Mm-hmm. And I liked it. I liked how big they were and muscly and stuff. I was really into it. And here this woman, she was a little smaller than me. So like 5'3" or something, 5'4". And little and roundish, real curvy, you know, curvy. So it was like, could you get any more different, you know, than, but it was like, nice, you know, it seemed nice. She was really just great. And so that was my first lesbian relationship. And now, was I off the subject?
Well, you just, you were in college still.
So I was still in college. Uh-huh. So then my parents, that was it. My parents' graduation gift was to go to Europe. And this woman that I was involved with, but I still was with this guy, because it was kind she went off to Europe, and she was going to be living in Spain for one or more years. And then their gift was for me to go to Europe, so I met her. They didn't know all that part, but I met her and we traveled together. And she knew Spanish. She was, that was her thing. She was fluent in it. So we got to travel to places and she could just talk away and it was really fun. And, you know, even though we only ran into one harrowing thing there, it was still a great experience to do that. However, we kind of decided maybe we weren't going to be monogamous. And actually, I guess we broke up during the trip and said, you know, we kind of need to go our own ways. So we did. I came back and I believe I had one more fling then with a guy, that the same one that was kind of before her. Well, so then I was faced when I came back with, what am I going to do? And I'd been working at a couple like part-time jobs. And so I was thinking, well, I guess I'll keep doing that. But like, what am I going to do? This can't be the real thing. And I was a weightlifter at the time. That's, I'd been like competing like in the amateur athletic union in events, usually with men, boys in my weight class, the 123 and 132 pound weight class. I'd be with boys because that boys are usually that size and women didn't really weightlift that much then. So this was a really unusual thing. When they'd see me come in to be in the meet or whatever, they'd be like, whoa. But I was really into it. And my former boyfriend was very well known. He was the, I wonder if I better not say who he is. I just don't know. So anyway, he helped me train. And one day he said, he'd read in this paper, he said, hey, look at this. These two women sued the city for firefighting. And you could do firefighting. And I was like, firefighting? I mean, I never even thought of it as a job. He said, that would be perfect for you. You're strong and, you know, all this stuff. And I was like, you know, what do they even do? I don't know. I mean, I know the stereotype. I guess they go to fires, but I wasn't even a person who noticed a fire engine, really. And much less know the difference between, like, an engine and a truck and all that equipment and stuff. So I went to the fire station. I had an interview with Chief Durkin, and he gave me a tour. And I was so impressed, especially with the auto extrication stuff. Like what happens when, not just auto extrication, but what happens with weird accidents, car accidents or some kind of weird thing that happened where somebody gets their head stuck, a kid gets their head stuck in a banister or their foot in a bicycle. Who do they call? Fire department. And there's all this cool equipment. And I just thought, that is great. It's great that that people do all this stuff. And the fire stuff, that's good too. But I like all that interesting, like problem solving, how to do this work. And so I guess I'll try. And there was just a series of things. So I tried the first thing and it was like some kind of written test. And it was so easy for somebody in college. I was like, this is easy. So I'd take the test and then I just would kind of forget about it. And then I'd get a letter. Oh, you passed, you know, on to the next. And then it was a physical thing. And I'd be like, all right, I'll go to the physical test. And you had to do this. And then I was kind of serious because I was a little jock, you know. So I thought, oh, I want to do well on it. And you know, this one thing was kind of hard, a ladder in the air. But I just got there a little early and watched how people did it. And I saw a really good way to do it. That wasn't the usual way. It was a different technique where you put your leg over and pull yourself up. And so I did it that way. Everybody did it. You know, once the few people who had started doing it that way, other people saw that, everybody would do it because it was so much easier than doing like a push like this. Mm-hmm. And all the objective was is to get up. It was a suspended ladder, to get up and over that ladder and down. And so just stuff like that. Well, I passed that, the physical agility test. And so, well, I still didn't know anything. And a while later, get a letter. Yeah, you passed. Next is going to be an oral interview. There were two oral interviews. Same thing, police and fire commission, passed. And the next oral interview with the chief. He already liked me because he had the tour and he was recruiting heavily. Good people, people he thought had good potential.
And trying to recruit women and minorities at that time.
Totally, yes. He wanted to get, and he wanted people that he thought would be successful. He didn't just want to do anybody for numbers. He really wanted people that wanted to, you know, do it. And he would like go right up and down lines of athletes. Like, you know, when they used to have different events or something, he'd go there and just pick people out and say, you know, you want to be a firefighter and stuff like that. And I heard about it a different way, but I've heard from other people that a lot of people, they got recruited in various ways. So I eventually I got a letter saying I was hired to be a firefighter. I had passed all the tests. I didn't even realize like thousands of people, maybe it was hundreds then, I don't know, but tried to do this. Mm-hmm. I just was slowly doing this thing and working at my two jobs, and then eventually I was one. The firefighting training is going to start February 4th, 1980. I graduated in 79. And so I went there that day and was, I didn't even think of it as, this is now my new career. What a great job.
Or you that know? You were breaking down any barriers.
No.
Did you know you were the first class of women?
No, I didn't know anything. I was just like, okay, here I go. Probably the chief said, you know, he probably said we haven't had women yet or something, because I knew about that article with those two women, because it had to do with them suing the city, and I would know a lot more about that later. But I was just more thinking, I'm going to have a job, and it seems... Oh, you can help people. You know, that's great. Mm-hmm, and maybe my psychology will come in handy because I'm going to have to work with guys. And, you know, my family was girls in the family. I wasn't like a farm kid or anything where I worked with equipment, really. Mm-hmm. The thing I had going for me, which was true for a lot of the women, is that I had something behind me. My thing was that I was the weightlifter. So I was strong, for especially for my size. And I knew it's the factor. I knew how to just, women generally don't know this unless they've had some experience either as a farm kid or in equipment operation or something, where sometimes you just use the bigger hammer and you don't care how it looks or if you're groaning or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just like with weight training, you gut it out sometimes and you might not look so pretty or whatever. Not that there isn't technique, because that's a huge part of it. But there's also, like, blood and guts. Just gut it out and hit the thing as hard as you can. And so, and women tend, especially then, to be a little more attentive. Oh, I'm going to hit it. And you had to hit it. You couldn't just maybe hit it. But if it was a technical thing, you had to hit it then the right way. And so then that came in there, too. But anyway, at the time, no. I was just like, here I go. I'm going to have a new job. You know, kind of. I mean, I knew there was sexism by then because I'd had all that women's studies, but I just didn't really, I just knew the chief. I didn't know any firemen, you know, firemen at the time. I didn't know any male firefighters. Mm-hmm. I just knew a couple, one woman a little bit, because she, I think, went on the tour with me, Bev, and that was it beforehand. So here I was, like, just, you know, walking into this thing, going to training. I thought it was going to be some more education, and then physical things. Yay, that's perfect. So I was blown away when people weren't, like, receptive and happy that we were there.
And how many of you were there?
There were, in our class, it started out with 33 people, and about, it was like thirds. Like a third of them were women, approximately. A third were minority men. All African-American except for one so-called Hispanic. We will call him Latino. And then 10 white guys who basically were all relatives of firefighters one way or another. Mm-hmm. That Chief Durkin had picked specifically. People all had to pass all those tests, and then he got to pick at the end who he wanted for sure. And he picked relatives because... For the guys, because that was what had done, been done traditionally. Uh-huh. And so he did that partly so that we would all, when people pointed fingers and they'd say, well, you're just there because you're a woman, then the opposite of that would be, well, you're just there because you're so-and-so's kid.
Uh-huh.
So nobody could really have anything up on each other. But uh-huh. what we did have were these groups, because I, of course, gravitated to my women.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought all the white guys knew everything already because they were kids or, you know, nephews or something. And I've subsequently found out they don't know everything either. But to me, it seemed like they did.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they sometimes knew even the training officers, at least met them or something, some of them. And then the black guys, they didn't have, they had different stereotypes, but they didn't have the strength thing. You know, they had the other stereotype, which is they weren't smart enough, supposedly. There was a thing about, well, one of them couldn't read. You know, just terrible stereotypical stuff. Because these were also, I mean, we were more educated than traditional firefighters were, because they were trying to get more educated people in the fire service, and so they offered incentive pay, a percentage higher than an average firefighter if you had a degree, once you got done with your probation and your apprenticeship. And so, and that made the guys in the stations, some of them, really mad, because we got paid a lot more. You know, it was like 10%. It was a good chunk of change.
Uh-huh.
And to me, the whole thing was like huge. Like, this is so much money. I was a college student to getting paid for a real job.
Yeah.
And so, plus, after a while, incentive pay for having college.
Uh-huh.
And so I was expecting, like, people to be kind of like Chief Durkin with open arms. Here you are. We're waiting for you all. And aren't you successful and everything? And no, not at all. It was like, you guys, we don't even think you can do this. Even if we see it, some of us aren't going to believe it. And we're going to spread any horrible thing we can about you. And so then, right away, very shortly, we, the women, got together in a tight little group to support each other. And also to share information about how to do stuff.
So you weren't all together in the same station?
No, we were in training for 3 months.
Oh, okay. So you're still in training at this point.
We're in training.
Okay.
And we had regular meetings together to try to make sure we could get through it.
So did you feel that they were trying to make you fail?
Yes. They clearly were. They'd already done that with the two women I'd read about in the paper.
Yeah, yeah.
Those two women, Marcia Holtz and Mary Sweeney, they had been supposedly flunked out for lack of upper body strength, which traditionally happens in every city, similar something.
Uh-huh.
And so they flunked them out, and they did it by, they would have us sign these evaluations, but they said, these don't matter. It's okay to sign them. When you sign them, it only means that you've received them. But Marsh and Mary knew from the legal process that that doesn't really mean that. Once you get in the legal thing, it means you agree to it. And they used it against them before, so they would tell us stuff like, "Don't, if you do, you have to sign it because they made you. If you, but at least write your version of whatever the thing is." So they'd say, like, you failed, you know, tying this knot or something. And you'd say, I was just learning that knot for my first time. Something like that. Because a lot of the stuff was your first time with something that was completely unfamiliar to you, like about pump operation or something. Or especially a physical thing, like a complicated six-person ladder raise where it was all rigid, like that second person has to go out. And, you know, really crazy stuff. And you couldn't learn it that fast, especially if you didn't have the background in mechanical things or a chainsaw or whatever, which I didn't. Mm-hmm. I was pretty handy, but I didn't know how to run a pump of a fire engine.
Uh-huh.
To me, it was like, what? I don't even know how it works. I didn't even know that the water came from the hydrant. It went to the fire engine. The engine has a pump. It increases the pressure, and it went out the hose. But they didn't explain it like that at the beginning.
Yeah.
They weren't that good at teachers, in my opinion. And some of us have shared that opinion, that they would just say, here, we're going to learn about pump operation. Well, you don't even know how the thing is set up, much less, that doesn't help you when you're starting to learn details about something and you don't even know that the water comes from here to
there.
Right,
right, right.
So it was very difficult. It was, we felt so attacked and just, and we knew, because we got to know that in the stations they were talking about us, who they were going to get and who failed what and what this and that. And we were always hearing reports of, you know, like it could be not even about us. It might be the African-American men, you know, so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. And so the pressure was like, if you ever did not do something right, then it kind of meant that you all couldn't do X. Uh-huh. So of course you wanted to do everything.
Right.
And that was one of my hardest things throughout my career, because personally, I didn't want to look like I didn't know things.
Uh-huh.
And that's a really bad way to be, actually, in life, is to be somebody who's afraid not to show if they don't know something.
Right.
And so I had to work on it, but there was always a seed of it there. Like, you know, you have to know, and you can't know everything, especially in something like that.
Right.
Because there's endless amounts to know. You can just do the best you can and try to, you know, keep up on things. So, but the really cool thing was, I had been living in this apartment and broken up with the guy that I was seeing, and and that was good because training was really, I had to really focus on it. And I needed to have a roommate, or I wanted to, just for whatever, money purposes, I guess. And I had put one sign up in a room of one's own, the feminist bookstore. And just said, need a roommate, feminist something, I don't know what. And one person came to the door and or called me and then came over, and it was Marcia from training. I didn't even know her, but she had seen one sign at Room of One's Own, because she had found out the result of the lawsuit, because they'd been fired. She found out the weekend before she could go to firefighter training for 3 months. She was farming at her parents' property, and so she didn't know about this. And Chief Durkin had a hand in this as well, like how this happened. But anyway, it ended up being last minute. She came in and needed a place to live because she had to go every day. She couldn't come from Maquonago where she was from. So she's at my door. I'm like, aren't you in firefighter training? Because it was kind of a blur, you know, because
this
was right at the beginning, a few days into it. So we end up being roommates in firefighter training. And then what's even weirder is, like, a year and a half before that, I went to, I think it was a Meg Christian concert at some funny little place. I don't remember where, but wherever. I can almost think of it, but it's not there anymore. So we went to this funny little place. I went to this funny little place with my friends, and I saw this woman there and thought she was so beautiful. And I was joking to my friends the whole night. Look at that woman. Isn't she something? She's so pretty. And just look at her smile. It lights up the world, and like that, and joking. And I was still in, you know, I was still involved with the guy, but I was like, you know, I like that woman. And I was watching her the whole night, whenever the lights were on or whatever, who she talked to, what she did, what she was wearing, all this stuff. And so Marcia moved in. And then I realized, like, a couple days into it, I was looking at her one day and I'm like, that is that woman that I saw at that concert. I know it is.
Because
I stared at her I've never seen her. Because I wasn't really in the community. There was only Liz Estrada. There wasn't, like, this big community. And plus, I was new, so I didn't really know anybody.
Yeah.
But I had, you know, these friends that I had commented to. And so I was like, I think it's that woman. So I asked Marcia if she was at that concert. And she said, I was. She said, I went to it. She lived in Maquonago, but she came to go to that concert. I said, I saw you there. And she said, what? Because she's real shy and she's modest, and she's like, well, you couldn't have seen me. I said, I saw you. Here's what you're wearing, corduroy pants, plaid shirt. You talked here, you sat there, all the stuff. She's like, oh my God, she's embarrassed and wouldn't. And I said, I just went out on a limb and told her I had a crush on her. And she didn't say anything. She was just like, okay, you know, and I was like, oh, great. Then after I'm like, oh, this is just great. Now we're living together, going to firefighter training. And I just completely made a huge mess. And she had to go off to the farm. And I don't know, some time went by, not a lot, but some time when I just felt terrible and stupid. But after a while, she came back and she told me she was in love with me.
Wow, just like that.
Yeah. And so then we went to firefighter training. So then even though they were horrible, I was in love. I was like this during the whole class staring at her. I was like, oh my God. And not only that, but she was a firefighting guru. She loved all that stuff. And she'd been through it before, right. You know, a certain amount of training. So she would say, I'd say, I don't get this ladder raise. It's crazy. Why does a second person have to come out and do the left arm? And she'd be like, that's just stupid. They're writing it militaristically. It's just means you need to push the ladder this way. See? And she'd show it. And I'd be like, oh, well, I get that. I just didn't get why you have to do the right foot. Because it was crazy the way stuff was written. Really cumbersome and bad, bad stuff. And later, once she was in training, many years later as a chief, she could iron out, you know, crazy stuff like that, because that was a gift she had. But not only was I, through training, there she was, like, being, here's what we do. And not just with me. We had our group.
Yes.
So
yes.
We would share, hey, if you get up to the top of the ladder, all the way up, then you can hook it with your leg and pull this heavy ladder up, and it's a lot easier than trying to muscle it. We'd share all our little stuff. And so we were really close. And the reality was, a lot of us were lesbians. You know, we are either identified as feminists and very cool, or lesbians.
Or both.
And one woman was straight. Yeah, we were. I mean, it's like a given, like the lesbians were all feminists, but that's not always true. So, but not every single woman was a lesbian. So, but usually everybody didn't know we were lesbians, but we had a hair rule. Your hair couldn't touch your collar. So of course we all looked like lesbians because we all had these short haircuts because it couldn't touch our collar. And it, you know, if you had it all long right here, it'd look really dumb. So we all had short haircuts. And so we looked like a bunch of lesbians, and we were strong. And like I was the weightlifter, and Bev was people had a tough time with her because she was so educated, and that even more than we were. She had her master's. So that was like, ooh, you know, she's like really smart. And so they really made fun of her because of that. And Rory was the judo champion. That's what she was kind of known for. She was the judo champion. And Marcia was the one who sued the city. Yeah. You know, so, well, there were a couple of women that didn't have any of that going for them. They were just kind of like average. I mean, not that they were not, you know, great people, but they appeared to be like more average women, a little smaller. See, Bev was tall, so that helped.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and whatever. Well, the smaller ones, and one even smoked cigarettes, those, and one had kids. Oh, my God. They actually did fire them. And we found out later they were planning to fire as many of us as they could. So.
Wow.
Not because of Durkin. He didn't even know that. But he knew it was basically over his dead body. You know, they would have to have proved it somehow.
And so they did ultimately, though, fire the woman with kids.
The one with kids and the other woman who actually was a relative of a firefighter. And somebody made her dad tell her.
Wow.
Because he was still on the job. And she did blow your mind because she was just a tiny little thing. Didn't work out, look like she worked out that much. Maybe she did, I don't know. But she smoked cigarettes. And the guys smoked like fiends in the fire station. God, you'd sit in a cloud of smoke. It was awful. But to have a woman smoke or to have kids, no. You know, you had to do like certain amount of stuff. Or you just were shunned, even though you were already shunned, you know. Like one woman, she tried to kind of be one of the guys. That didn't work either because you couldn't be one of the guys either. And later that came to really help us because if you're not used to being one of the guys, you don't have anything to lose later when you're a lieutenant or something, because aren't going to get cast out from a group that you never were part of. So then we were able to stand alone and do things, you know, or stand up for a safety thing or whatever the thing was. And like one of our original things was we didn't want people calling us girls. You know, the feminists of us, we would say we're women. And they'd be like, oh, we're so... You know, they want to be called women, you know. You know how people used to be, though, in the 80s?
Yes,
to say woman, it'd be like, what, lady? Oh, you know, anything. And it's like, could you just say woman? It's not that hard. Oh, that's that nice lady, you know. And we'd be like, we're women. Are you going to say fire lady? How stupid is that? We can just say women. Well, after we said it for years, they would say women. They couldn't help it. They just heard it a lot, and they started to say women, too. So... You know, all those arguments. But the fact was, there were actually lesbians too.
Of course. So, yeah.
And Marsh and I were a couple, but they didn't know we were a couple. People didn't know we were a couple, except our inner circle, because we now were really close, the lesbians especially. We had our own little group, and then the feminists and lesbians, and then the women were loosely all together. And then, you know, we were kind of buddies with African-American men, too. And then we weren't so much buddies with the white guys. There really were kind of groups. And so, and we felt like they didn't see when we did stuff right. And so we, you know, I anyway had resentment about things, because I wasn't used to being treated poorly, basically. I was used to being successful and have people say, hey, she's good, or whatever. Not like, you know, with a microscope. Like, at one point we made a film about our experiences, a video, and it got, well, we were a little bold and we were doing it in the administration building, and some guys, a guy came in to get something in the room, and here we were sitting at a table. At that point, we were enacting a scene in the fire station, in the kitchen, and we had noses and mustaches on. The men of the scene had those nose mustache things, and this is so terrible, but it was kind of true. Pillows in our shirts to make guts, because we were all jockey, you know, so we were, you know, making fun, basically, because we were mad. We are by now out of training in the fire station, so we were doing this after hours, but we did it at the administration building, and a guy came in, he saw it, and he, like, kind of backed out. He was like, and then it went vroom, around the whole fire department that they're in there making fun of us.
Oh, wow.
And we are making a video for a women's conference, actually, which we did do it, and the women loved it because they could all relate. All the ones could relate to all the stuff that we showed, because we showed vignettes. And at the time, it was hard to make a video.
And it, where is that video now? Do you know?
We erased it.
Okay.
We erased it because we got so much terrible... there was so much flack about it. And we had a division with the women because some of us wanted, the guys wanted to see it. And we were like, let's show it then. They want to see it, we're good with it. But some of the women that had come on after us weren't kind of, they weren't quite seen in the same way as the first ones were. And some of them in particular didn't want to show the video. That was basically the divide, because they were in it too. And, but guys liked them more, they had more to lose. And so they didn't want to show it, and we did, and we went with them, because it just, what are you going to do? I mean, you either have to show it or not, and so we talked and, you know, whatever, and so we didn't show it. And so then Bev erased it so that we could say we erased it.
I see. Okay, so what, you're a firefighter now.
In the station, and involved with Marsha.
Involved with Marsha. So at the fire stations, were you able to work as a group? Did you have other women with you at
first,
the fire stations?
They put, well, the only people that worked together were Marsha and Jan. They were together at the big fire station. And so, but that was considered 2 week links together.
Oh, wow.
If there were two women. Because one was 1 week, week link. So if you had two, then for sure. But they were together. And then all the rest of us were each at our own station, even on different shifts.
Wow.
So, like, I saw Bev on our shift change in the morning, and we were three women each on different shifts. On the, each of the three shifts were put at this one fire station where Westtown is. It was a brand new fire station at the time, and we each were put there. And one reason that we're sure we were put there is because they had this big ladder. It was a three-section ladder. It was really heavy. And they made us in this engine. You could have different ladders mounted in different ways, but it was real high and heavy. So you had to get it off up here and then muscle it down. Like, you couldn't just bounce it or, you know, something easy. And it, and they had made us, because we are going to that fire station, they made Marsha and Bev and me raise that ladder all the time by ourselves. It's really a three-person ladder, but we had to do it
all by yourself.
We had to butt it up against a building, and that means put the bottom on the building so that holds it, and then raise it. And we had done that a lot of times, because they would always pull out these crazy things for us to do that they didn't even do anymore. Ladders that they didn't even use that were really heavy. Mm-hmm. This is another thing a lot of departments would do. And say, oh, well, you might have to use this sometime, which could be true with anything. Yeah, you might have to lift up that fire engine, too, because it ended up on a person's leg. But you can't, you know. Mm-hmm. So they bring up, they keep bringing up. And then the guys in our class would be like, geez, you know, this is hard even for the guys. Or, I mean, there were just bunches of stuff like that. So we had to raise that huge ladder at Station 2. And then once we got there, we'd already raised it a lot. But our each of our crews had to see it, too, because they couldn't, of course, hear that we did it. They just had to see that.
Wow.
It didn't matter if I did it then. They hadn't seen Bev do it, you know, or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah. So we are each at different stations. And, of course, it was before the time of cell phones. I sound so old when I say stuff like that. But so we couldn't call each other easily. Like now people in their free time might talk on their cell phone.
Uh-huh.
But then there was the outside line and the inside line. And the inside line, you could talk to someone at a different station. But you had a 5-minute limit. So you could only talk for that few minutes. Well, Marsh and I were on different shifts. So we didn't get to see each other.
Uh-huh.
She worked 24 hours on one day and
oh,
I worked 24
geez,
hours the
yeah.
next day. We did that. We would do that on and off for a while. Then we'd have a couple days off that we both had off. But it was very weird to be on different shifts. I mean, later on, once people, you know, years went by and there were marriages even on the fire department and lesbians that were involved for years and stuff too together, sometimes they liked being on separate shifts because they could take care of kids or
right,
whatever.
Right, right.
But for us, it was really weird
mm-hmm.
to be on different shifts. And but so we'd want to call each other, but we could only talk for 5 minutes and then we'd have to call back. And we didn't want to call too much or they'd know we were a couple.
Uh-huh.
But then one day, Marsh and I were coming back from somewhere. Well, it was her farm in Maquonago. And I was so tired, so I laid down on her lap, which later I realized that's a dangerous thing because you can, you know, what if you got in an accident? Once
mm-hmm.
I was on the fire department, anything can be in an accident. I mean, I'd seen so much stuff by
uh-huh.
then. But at that time, I was still naive, and I had put my head down on her lap. We were almost home. Well, evidently a bus went by with this fire captain was riding the bus, and he saw me get up from that because we were almost home. So I got up, and he spread around the whole department that we were basically having sex in this our truck or some crazy rumor.
Mm-hmm.
And Chief Durkin made him come over to our house and apologize, which I have never seen a guy that scared
good for
to come him. Over. But I heard later from somebody just like a couple months ago at our reunion, our
mm-hmm.
30-year reunion,
mm-hmm.
I heard that that officer, he actually didn't say bad stuff after that. Like, he did change. At least he never said anything bad. He was upbeat. And he used to be one of those pot stirrers that would always
uh-huh.
say, like, that's why he said that to begin with, to get people
uh-huh.
to... Well, then we were basically outed. And so then we were like, okay, you know, we'll just might as well... We're not going to kiss in the station or something.
Right, right.
And we're
right.
not going to be unprofessional because we both want to be very professional.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we worked together, which we didn't very often, because there are times you could get for the day, you might go somewhere on even a different shift,
uh-huh.
that we would work together and we're not going to sleep in the bed or something together. You know, like
right,
we're not
right.
going to be stupid, but at least we could not be so funny about calling because
right.
people knew then.
Right.
So that was very...
Did you get any harassment around that or anything else?
A lot of other stuff, yeah, but around being a lesbian? I don't really remember it like that. That it was more being a woman. That
hmm.
almost being a lesbian made it easier in a way. Because one of the problems that people would always talk about are the firefighter wives. And I think it just made it a little easier, maybe, my... theory would be that the men would be able to say, she's a lesbian, you know, she's a big dyke, whatever.
I have heard that. Mm-hmm.
And so she's safer or something.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I didn't really feel that so much. It would be hard to say it, though. Like one time later when I wasn't with Marcia anymore and I was in a long-term relationship with somebody, and then there'd be an event and I'd invite Mary and then they'd say, well... like somebody that I didn't know was on the crew and said, well, who's that? And it was, you know, it was really hard at the time to say, that's my partner. Like now it seems more normal because mm-hmm. they're really used to it and people have had kids and right. they've met a bunch of different lesbians, but we are the only ones. So I'd be like, I remember saying, that's my partner. And then I kind of turned around and went like, oh God, I said it, you know, to the whole mm-hmm. bunch of guys sitting at the table. Okay, what's going to happen? Is lightning going to strike me? And then it would be like, well, okay then, you know, and and it was okay. It wasn't like I would bring it up, but the stuff that was stronger for me is just the anti-woman thing. Mm-hmm. When they would either do it, it got to be that they could do it subtly by kind of saying how stupid their wife was or something, which kind of meant, see how women are? And rather than so-and-so, you know, would, you know, mm-hmm. couldn't do this. But early on, it was more like, well, did you hear that so-and-so didn't do that? And we rose pretty quickly through the ranks, so then we had control over the environment more. And so if you're the lieutenant, people aren't going to be able to say stuff because mm-hmm. they will be
How
in trouble.
How quickly were you made lieutenant?
Well, Marcia was first, and I think I was second, maybe, I think, of the women. And that was about, I think maybe, I'm not good at timing, but I think it was like 7 years into the job, which is mm-hmm. pretty early. Mm-hmm. But there happened to be a giant class was made, and I was on the panel of people that took the tests and did the oral stuff and whatever, and so was Marcia. Uh-huh. And so that was really good for me in a lot of ways. I mean, I liked what I had done right before that, which was being the driver, what they call now an engineer, because you also run the pump and stuff. That mm-hmm. was good, too. But I really liked being a very good, the best I could be of a supervisor. That mm-hmm. suited me. And, well, I'm the oldest kid in the family, so I really like to tell people what to do. So, and in the fire station, in my opinion, they had it backwards. They would act very militaristic in the fire station, which is not where you have to be militaristic, because you eat together, you do stuff, you can be communal there. But then when you're on the fire scene, you need to be militaristic. But there wasn't a very good hierarchy there.
Very
it was kind of like freelancing and goofy people doing unsafe things. Like, yeah, let's knock this wall down. It's, you know, like, wait a second. There needs to be organization. Well, the whole fire service was changing and becoming, getting incident command in place and getting structure on the fire scene. And I'm not saying I knew all about that because I didn't. I was just learning as well. But I was, and I think the women with our different socialization, we were able to bring in, why not let people have a hand in how we are mm-hmm. in the fire station? Mm-hmm. Let's have pictures on the walls here. We live here, basically. My fire station, it wasn't even my idea, but somebody had decided to put pictures of us, the firefighters, in doing stuff at the fire station or on scenes on the walls. And it was great. Uh-huh. It really felt neat to see these pictures. And uh-huh. I think they're still up, you know, and I think other stations did that as well.
Hmm.
And like there's a new fire station now in Middleton. It's brand new, beautiful volunteer department.
Uh-huh.
And a couple paid chiefs or whatever.
I think I've been there.
And they've done all this state-of-the-art stuff to make it home-like so that when the people are there, because it's volunteer, they're not going to volunteer if it's yucky. Mm-hmm. I mean, a few do, but... And so that has been taken to a way further extent, and it's amazing, you know, mm-hmm. Where you can really take it. People work out there. It's a beautiful fitness facility.
Huh.
People can bring their kids and have a place to be with their kids. Where they sleep in their bedrooms is really nice. When we first slept there... Most of the stations had one giant sleeping room for the firefighters and then one for the officer. Sometimes there was an extra room, and that room was usually used for the person who snored the loudest because uh-huh. they would keep sure. the other ones up. Well, some of the guys were really weird about women sleeping there, so they would say, well, the woman should sleep in there. But then the other guys would be pissed because they'd be like, why don't I get my own room?
Uh-huh.
So mostly we just wanted to sleep. What were we going to do in a bed? When you got a call, you got up and got your gear on. I slept in t-shirt and shorts.
Uh-huh.
You know, the guys were like, we'd hear that, well, we can't run around in our underwear. guys were not always running around in their underwear. They were either in their bed or they were getting their gear on, you know? I mean, you're not running around thinking you're going to have dinner now in your underwear or something. So there were all these crazy things that weren't problems at all that people were really hung up on. And one of them was the bunking situation, that you're all going to be in bed in this big room. And it wasn't that great sleeping in a room with a bunch of men. I'm just saying that it's a little weird because men have different habits and stuff. And they do snore louder than women in general and whatever. But as time went on, the newer fire stations were built with several separate facilities. And then after a while, they even put partitions up so that everybody had a separate little area.
How nice.
And people like it because some people want to read at night in their bed and other people want quiet. And so the partitions gave everybody a little privacy and you could just put them up in a big room. And then they built, you know, they even got a little fancier. And so it's, I mean, I've never even been to the new fire station in Madison. It's even solar powered and I mean, it's like eco stuff. So anyway, very cool stuff. So what else you got?
Well, I have heard stories of harassment. How was it for you individually?
So about as being a woman?
Yeah, as being a feminist. I mean, I've heard the term the radicals, that you were called the radicals.
Yeah, I kind of forgot that.
And
yeah, since I've been away from it for a while, I haven't thought of some of the stuff. But yeah.
I mean, did you
Think for me, yeah, we were. Because some of us that were really feminist, I mean, we weren't just regular. A lot of the women that we've met, they're just kind of more average women, not political-oriented women necessarily. But we're Madison, Wisconsin. The atmosphere in general is more progressive. And those of us that came from the college, you know, arena were more progressive. And Durkin had chosen us by being people he thought would be successful. So we were strong-minded. We had come from athletics, maybe, or in my case, you know, other thing. But so we were radical, you know? I mean, I had really radical ideas about stuff. And to be in what's called a paramilitary organizations, like, I'm really glad it's not the military, you know, that it's actually service. That, not that the people aren't doing service, but for me, I didn't want to be in the service. But I liked providing this service that people really need, firefighting. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm making a bunch of money too, which is like, whoa, you know, I can feel good about it and making money. So even if I was called radical and different people were doing stuff, like both Marsh and I, for instance, we would write notes down because I'm used to writing notes when I learn stuff. So I don't have to go later, what button did you push first before you did the chainsaw? And safety things were really important to me. So I'd write a lot of notes down. I also wrote down if people said really mean stuff. Or did stuff, like all the pornography that was in the fire station. There was tons of it in the fire stations. And they always have a big thing about well, we don't really know what pornography is, which was happening all over. I knew from my feminist classes that this was happening in all different arenas, that people were like, there were lawsuits. That's not pornography. Well, what is pornography? And it was happening in the fire station. So the guys would say, we like to share that. And the women would say, those of us who would speak out, that's not right. We almost came to blows in a big meeting we had to have with the whole department. These guys were red-faced and screaming, some of them, that's ours to share. That's our personal stuff. And then other people be like, well, then put it in your locker, women. Because the guys weren't, like, sticking up for us. It was just, you know, the few women who'd speak out. But we might as well, because some of us, they didn't like us anyway. So we just... We paid a big price for, you know, saying our stuff because, like, people really didn't like me. I mean, certain people hadn't even met me. I could see when I'd meet them. I'd be going to shake their hands, and we both, like, I would have heard so-and-so was really a jerk. When you meet him, don't do anything that he will, you know, whatever, try to get you in trouble or something. And he'd heard about me, whatever. And so, but we'd never met. You know, because you kind of knew who the really bad ones were. And they knew all our, you know, stuff that went around about us. So, like, I can remember meeting more than one guy. And when we'd go to shake hands, say, oh, I'm Pam. And he's so-and-so. And we'd both be like, we expected to meet a monster, you know. And here it's just, I was like, hi, I'm Pam, you know, or whatever. And then he'd be like, and I'd be like thinking, you're Jim so-and-so or whatever. And he'd be like, well, you seem kind of nice and you're kind of cute, or, you know, like,
right,
and
right.
So then they'd be like, oh, you know, because the stories would get, I mean, the fire department is just amazingly able to just spread stuff around instantly. And so there were different things that would happen. And if real things did happen, like the pornography thing, we were throwing it out, and we had incinerators. So we were gradually throwing out the pornography. Marsha and Jan started it when they worked at that fire station together. We were on probation. You can get fired for anything when you're on probation. But we still would sneak, and we'd throw little by little in the incinerator, in the incinerator. And I still have a little bit of it, because I would save it and say, this is the kind of stuff people had, just to show. Because it was gross. Some of it was normal, quote, pornography. But some of it was pretty disgusting, you know, books or whatever. And plus, or written stuff in the bathroom, you know, just, you know, really mean. This is a professional place. And politically, this is not right either. So we would have all, you know, they were throwing it out. Well, then when I got there, we got our stations all switched after our first year. And so I continued throwing the pornography out. Until one day when there wasn't much left, and I just said, I'm just going to throw the last of it out. But I knew. Even though if it was little by little, they were noticing, but they couldn't really, you know, know for sure. And they were really supposed to put it in a locker, but they didn't. You'd have to clean the men's locker room, and, you know, there it'd be. And just the... So that one day I threw all of it out, and oh, I thought there was going to be a riot. I mean, people were not talking to me on my crew of 11 people or whatever it was. Silence, no eye contact. Even the nice guys, they were civil at best, because they felt like that was their right, and it was just a war, you know, basically.
Yes, yes. Wow.
And my officer asked me if I threw it out.
And what did you say?
No. He knew I threw, everybody knew I threw it out.
But you just said
but
no.
But he would have had to take it further.
So you just
and
said
And I was
no.
too afraid. Yeah. So I just said no. And then nobody did it, could do anything.
Smart move.
Well,
they
he was
no,
a really nice guy.
They had
guy.
No evidence. They couldn't prove that you threw it
right.
out.
Right. Because it was burned up. You know, we had to clean the incinerators too. So, because we were the rookies, and all the rookies had to do all the, you know, jobs like that. So, oh yeah, there were tons of things, you know. I mean, and just not only that kind of stuff, but just stuff like the bad training. They, you know, guys who were little were hired sometimes, but guys who were little knew how to work that system because they'd been doing it their whole lives. So they would function, even though maybe that wasn't the best education on how to do this. Plus, they were guys. Some of them had done tools and things before. But also just, I don't know, just the whole, I mean, you'd walk into a room sometimes and it was so just charged, like really not, I mean, the guy, we put it in our skit for that movie, was in the morning at shift change, it'd be, hey, Johnny, how's your boat? You know, and then, oh, great, I went up north last week and it was so much fun. And then you'd be like, hey, they just say hello and nod, really stiff, you know, partly because they weren't your friend. Later it was different, but at first, it was so, ugh. And those of us who were early paid a price. I mean, those later women, they liked them more. They'd already, some of them even liked us a little bit, you know. And they, if you were perfect, they might like you more. But you couldn't be perfect. But like Marsha, she could always remember everybody's name. And even if somebody was mean to her every day, she'd still say, hi, Johnny. How are you? You know, whereas I'd be like, hi. You know, I just, I, and then I was told, the thing about me was that I had a chip on my shoulder because I just, I was a kind of reserved, but I also just couldn't pull it up to always be really friendly because I would be nervous, you know, and so I'd show it in a weird way. Plus, I didn't want to look like I was, didn't know things, so I was, you know, sort of.
Sure.
And I was like, one of my friends said, one time when she saw me in my uniform and everything, she goes, oh, you have your firefighter face. It was like totally stiff and different, you know, like just a whole different thing. And I think it's very true for the pioneers of different fields. It can be true where they don't necessarily stay as long or keep, you know, they get burned out.
Right.
And just right. don't want to do it the whole time, maybe. Or who knows how they pay. And they could become alcoholic. I mean, there's lots of ways you can pay for something as being the front runner there. But it would be hurtful to be like, you know, they'd be like, well, she's so nice. And I think, she's my friend. You know, she just came on after me. It's not, we're not that different, really.
Right.
But she, it just is a different thing in the timing. But what those women who did come later, they're amazingly able to say, you pioneered, we know. Because things also got subtler over the years, which is a very hard thing to fight as well when things are subtle.
Yeah.
So we had some blatant stuff. And we had subtle stuff, too, once people got wind of, you know, don't do this. But you can make this comment because that's subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And no one said you can't say that. And that's what some of these big, like, controversies would be. Is like, well, what can you say then? You know, if you can't say, you know, this. Can you say this? You know, and be like, God. But that's why there's a legal system. Because it ends up being black and white. No, in the workplace, you cannot say this.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even imply it, actually. You know, I mean, and then there's other ways people can do stuff if they don't like that. And to me, it was because there was this hero image, and the women made it like, how can you be a hero if a mere woman can do this?
Oh, my God. You know? Very good.
And if you get a bigger city, the hero image was even worse because it's a bigger city and there's a hierarchy among fire departments. That if you're in New York, they're the firefighters of firefighters. So the woman there, or women, but the woman that we knew was like, she was a lawyer and fought things through. She was a lawyer before she became a firefighter.
Wow.
And so she had to fight on some other levels because she was in the Hero of Heroes city, you know? And I mean, it's just incredible. And some of the cities, the women, what a lot of cities would do is only hire one woman at a time. So that's where Chief Durkin did a very different thing by hiring all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, it was great because we had each other. And
we
changed the world more by because there were more. One takes forever.
Right.
So he did that. But the hard thing was is that it was more threatening, too. Because here we come. Usually when there's one woman, the guys totally make that woman adjust. Like there was a woman before us that had been on, I think in Ohio, and she'd breastfed in the fire station. Oh my God. You would have thought she, and she was married. I mean, it wasn't even like she was a lesbian. So those kind of things.
Wow.
I'm losing my train of thought a little bit.
How many years did you end up working for the fire department?
18.
18. And why did you leave?
Well, I was in a relationship with somebody and in a different city. And, well, she was a firefighter in a different city. And I wanted a change. I was a lieutenant, and it was pretty good. I had a good crew. I was pretty happy. I realized people actually kind of liked me and thought I did a good job, and I worked hard to do a good job. But it wasn't like, I wanted to do other things with my life, too, so I had, like, an itch to do some other stuff. And since I was in this relationship, and one of us really needed to move to continue. At least that's what she said. I could have been okay still doing distance. But anyway, I said I'd move. And that was a very big thing. Because I'd always kind of thought, I don't really think... I mean, the way I came into it wasn't like, this is not what I'm going to do for 30 years. So that I even stayed that long. Like, there were days I'd be day by day. Okay, I'll do this another week. But I really don't want to do this forever. Because I want to be appreciated, too.
Right.
And feel good. I dreaded going to training. I felt sick every single day driving there to the training center.
And were you leading the training?
Well, this is when I was in training, being a student.
Oh, okay.
But then years later, when I was put in the training division as a captain, I would feel sick still going to that same down that same road.
Wow.
It took me a while. After a while, I wasn't. But that whole area where MATC is, that's where a training center was.
Yeah.
It just, I got that same feeling back of just tension and stress. And I'd be like, okay, I'm in charge now with my cohorts. It's okay. But I, you know, even just thinking about it, my shoulders go up and I can feel like, don't make a mistake. You know, you gotta perform. And And so it just was, and it was so amazing to me because, like, the people in my training class that I taught with others, I wasn't the only trainer is what I'm trying to say, but in other training classes as well, they had fun in their training class. They'd be like, oh, it was so fun. And I was like, there were moments of fun, but that was not fun. I mean, it could have been fun because I love doing ladders and all that. That would be so fun. But to be, like, evaluated and have people, like, I mean, we had people that would, like, lean on our ladder so that you couldn't. A technique with the ladder is when you're the person on the bottom, the butt person, you're holding it, you lean back because it lifts the weight off. We had guys that would lean on our training. One of our training officers leaned forward, partly because he wasn't, you know, great at knowing what the best way to teach was, but also just to make it hard so that you couldn't hardly raise the ladder because he was leaning on it, you know. And that's the kind of stuff we'd tell each other. But I mean, there's a point where you had to muscle it because you can't say lean back, you know. He was the officer.
Jeez.
So when people said, I mean, that was a great gift. Like, my people that were in my training class that I taught, they said, we love this. And it was fun to teach things in a good way and and say, this is the safe thing to do. And here's why we teach this like this, you know, and here's why we need this particular knot. And okay, these are the different chainsaws and this is how you run one, assuming nobody knows how. And the people that know, they just have to sit through it. That's the problem with teaching adults.
Right.
Some people know a lot and some people know zero. And so it's not that easy to be, sometimes it's really boring for some people. And not only that, but in the fire service, there's a lot of stuff you have to go over and over and over because time goes by and you haven't done it, but you have to be up on it if you do need to do it. And so it's kind of boring if you're somebody who remembers it or has used a chainsaw every day cutting up firewood, but this other person only does it on the job. Well, you got some differences, and that's only one thing, you know, and there's millions of things.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was even the answer to the question.
No, it was. It was. So while you were a firefighter, did you have time to be politically involved in Madison? Were there things that you did that you recall?
The most favorite thing was starting the organization Galvanize, Gay and Lesbian Visibility Alliance. Well, by then people knew I was a big dyke, you know, so. And it just seemed like a cool thing to do, and I had, you know, my free time. Firefighters have a good schedule with chunks of time off, and I could, for a year, I was heavily involved organizing the first march in Madison, and that was really great because Madison hadn't had one, and it's a progressive city that needed to have a march. So, and we even had at least one of the meetings in the fire station. Because that the fire stations have areas for public meetings. And so they had to kind of find out if there was going to be any trouble around that. But no, it's for a public meeting, and that's what we had. And, of course, nobody even came in or anything. Like, oh, my God, these people are in there. And there weren't even any flaming gay guys. They were just, you know, a group of people coming having a meeting. So, yeah. So that was really cool. But one of my coworkers came and picketed at that march. So, Ronnie Greer. Yeah. And he had been somebody that I really liked in training. And so it was really sad that he came to be, to have, you know, picket against rights and pride for gays and lesbians and supporters. So, anyway.
How about the lesbian variety show? What was that like for you?
That was...
Did you ever perform in it?
I did. Yes. I don't remember the year anymore, but I just, I'd gone to it a number of times, and then I had, that's kind of when I was starting to think, you know, I might, I was involved with that person that was from, this woman from another city, and I was kind of thinking, you know, I want to kind of explore my art side more. I mean, I could do stuff on my time off. That's what people would always say, well, why don't you just do it on your time off? Well, even though we had this good schedule, on your time off, you had to do all your regular stuff, okay? So we worked 24 hours. And on your, I'll get back to the variety show, but on your time off, you had to do everything. Do your laundry, do your shopping, do your errands, do your all your stuff in your day. So all of a sudden your day would be gone, and then the next day you'd be at work. And if you were tired because you were up with calls, which people have a lot of calls because primarily firefighters go on medical calls. That's like 98% of the fire calls. I don't know if that's still true, but probably. And so then your day would be spent sleeping or, you know, doing your stuff. And then you, like, even a regular thing like going back to school, it required a lot of finagling because you never had the same days off. So you had to get people to work for you. And I did go back to school and I took physiology, anatomy, chemistry, different stuff. Those women's studies classes, different things, just because I'm interested in a lot of stuff. Or I would take class in pottery, this art stuff. And so I just want to kind of explore that side, like performing. Doing. I was interested in dance. I was taking some classes, and I thought, I'm going to perform in that show and do an interesting kind of, I didn't know what I was going to do, but some kind of dance with a theme, and then it evolved into starting out looking like a guy, but ending up being a woman. And that was just what I wanted to do, and then dance around with it to good music.
How was it received?
It was a little better than that, but it sounds kind of bad, but probably was bad if I saw the videotape. I think they told me they really liked it. I remember it was like, wow, I never thought I really enjoyed performing. That wasn't really one of my things, is wanting to perform. Especially when I took dance classes, it's very, people really, when you take a dance class, it's like really geared around performing usually. But I just like doing the dancing. I liked learning like how to do your feet and all the different stuff. And I didn't like performing. In fact, I realize now that what I didn't like was having any more pressure in my life. If something was pressurized, I shied away from it. Except for going to school had a certain amount of pressure, but I just didn't want to be pressured because I was pressured already. But the variety show just seemed friendly to me, and that, you know, it would be kind of fun to have a deadline and actually perform it. And so I did that. And then I actually, now I remember, I was in a couple other times doing country line dancing, which I wasn't like totally into country line dancing, but it was fun to do it with a group, and a couple of firefighters did it too, the firewomen. And we'd practice and we'd try to figure out which days we all had in common off so we could, you know, have a really good thing. And that was really well received too. People wanted to have classes in it. We taught classes for a while in country line dancing.
And Terry or
Marsh and Terry continued teaching that for a long
Apple
time.
Island.
Right.
And did you attend events at Apple Island?
I did. Yes, I got to do a lot of cool stuff. I even was on Shirts and Skin Basketball. We had a event where we decided this isn't right that men get to go around without their shirts on and women have to wear their shirts. And so we're going to start at Orton Park and
Were you part of that?
Yeah, were you?
Uh-uh, but I heard about it.
No, and so we did it. We played Shirts and Skins basketball there. And then we rode our bikes without our shirts on through town, through Picnic Point, out to this person's house that had a pool out wherever. And I'm telling you, I mean, I was a little radical. People didn't do anything. I thought I might get arrested or something. And so I had my shirt like right next to me so I could put it on quicker. I don't know what I thought that was going to do. But no, they didn't. Nothing happened. People would just look and look away. They couldn't. They didn't know what to think or do. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, that's
because that was one of my things. I was like, that is so unfair.
Yes, yes, it certainly.
And men,
is.
At least they should wear their shirts then. If we're gonna have such a thing about that. So yep. I can't even believe I did that now when I think about it. Like, God, that was pretty
So did you play sports? Were you part
did,
of sports
but
teams
I never
in Madison?
We didn't have sports so much for girls when I was growing up. In my high school, we only had after-school basketball, GAA it was called, Girls Athletic Association. Mm-hmm. You just played with each other after school. Nobody taught you or anything, so it was awful. And we had tennis, track, and golf. Golf? That sounds funny. Maybe bowling or something. I don't know. But I was only interested in track, but I was a cheerleader. That was what the jock girls did then. They might do the other things too, but I was really bad at tennis, so I didn't like that. And so I did track and cheerleading for basketball and football 4 years of high school. And I loved cheerleading because we did major stuff. That was before boys were cheerleaders, really. Mm-hmm. So we had mounting where we'd be at, it sounds bad when I'm talking about lesbian stuff, but we had where we'd stand on each other's shoulders and stuff.
Yes, like they do in the college teams.
Right.
Now.
Mm-hmm. And they do even crazier stuff, but we did simple stuff. But at the time, we'd go to cheerleading camps and everything and learn all this great stuff where we'd be lifting each other and doing really fun stuff. And I really liked my position because I was in between. Sometimes I was the one on the bottom where I'd be holding the person up on top or some. I have pictures of me mm-hmm. doing stuff. Or I'd be the one on the top doing standing on their shoulders. And so you had to learn how to hike the person up there. I could do it right now. I could do it in two ways. I could either stand like this and have somebody climb up me and hold them up here, or I could bounce them a certain way and get up there. But if I had to jump up on their shoulders, I'd have a little my knees would be like, oh, that's a little tough.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was the jock thing. So to answer the question, I didn't really play sports because we didn't really have anything to play. Mm-hmm. But as when I was like a pretty new lesbian, that's what like everybody did, played basketball and softball.
Uh-huh.
So I learned as an adult, but I was not very good. I got better at basketball with practice, but I still just didn't have the instincts that you do when you're
mm-hmm.
a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggled with it to not be kind of stiff and funny. And softball, I was either terrified or bored the whole time. And so sometimes I thought I was like that in firefighting too, either terrified or bored.
Interesting.
And it's a bad way to be, really. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, and then I realized, why am I doing this? I don't, and then I would get hurt playing softball too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
so that was good that I didn't do that, but it was fun to have kind of that camaraderie because I had done individual things more when I was young. So
how about the bar scene? Did you have anything to do
with
the
bar
scene?
I did a little bit with it, not too much, but I mean, like I said, there was Lysistrata,
mm-hmm.
but then it burned down. And we even talked about that because some of us inspected that building because that's one of the firefighters' job is to go inspecting.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't really do the big inspecting. We just did kind of easier stuff. But like that owner wasn't good, wouldn't do the stuff they were supposed to do. And so it was almost inevitable. And then here, what's the coincidence of that? Lysistrata burns down? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah
right.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was ever ruled, you know, arson
uh-huh.
or whatever. And same with when Hotel Washington.
Right.
I went to that
right.
as well. And that was just sickening.
It was.
To see that one place. We didn't have much, you know.
Yeah.
And comments were made about it. I just heard of the comments, so people didn't say much to me. But there was always kind of a thing, not only because it was gay and lesbian, but also didn't, like, people, weren't there, like, apartments there for lower income people
mm-hmm.
or something?
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of like, oh, that place, you know,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. We
mm-hmm.
have to go on calls there, you know, a lot
mm-hmm.
or whatever. So, yeah. So I wasn't totally involved because I never drank. I wasn't,
uh-huh.
I did a little in high school just to see and a little in college just to, you know, that's what you do. But I never liked it. So then I just realized I don't even like drinking. I'm not drinking anymore. So I didn't. And I
How
still
How about
don't.
Feminist things like Take Back the Night and stuff like that?
I would
that.
Go to lots of stuff. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I would go to, not everything, but I was pretty involved in stuff for a lot of years. And then I kind of eased back later and there wasn't as much stuff. It was kind of like the younger women were doing that. More and I was more being a doing just my personal stuff.
Right,
you know.
Right, right. What about the Michigan Women's Music Festival? Was that important in your life?
It was. I loved that. I wish every woman would go to that, straight or lesbian or transgender. Now I finally decided it's okay if transgender people have their own festival. But I just think it's great for a woman to go there and see everything that's there and just experience what a woman's community can be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we
mm-hmm.
used to, going back to firefighting, we would talk about that. Like, what would it be like if it was a whole bunch of women,
uh-huh.
all women on the fire crew?
Yeah.
The officer,
yeah.
the driver, the people.
Yeah.
We wanted to have one to have guys come in one at a time and be the one guy there that day
yeah.
and feel. And we wouldn't have even been mean.
Right.
Like we had,
mm-hmm.
but just because it's weird to be. And now there is a crew that's almost all women, the officer,
really?
The driver, and a couple, it's like, I met, like, three of the crew anyway, and some of the guys were, like, they'd be kind of, now, this is how many years later? 30. Kind of shaking in their boots a little bit, but then they'd be like, the women were saying, the guy was like, this is kind of weird being the only guy, and they're like, well, we're being nice. You, what are you talking about? We're trying to actually make you feel comfortable, and you still feel weird, so you can imagine.
Yes.
You know, so, yeah, in the days of the 2-week links, if two women were on a crew, when I had this one crew where I was one of the two supposed 2-week links, but there were also two guys, a Latino guy that was smaller and a white guy who was skinny. But we were, and there were a couple of like sort of average white males on there too. And people like heard about us all over. We were called the handpicked 4B crew. Because supposedly we were handpicked to be together a bunch of misfits or whatever. So when people were detailed to our crew, they wouldn't want to come if we needed a person for the day. They would like be like, no, we don't want to go. We don't want, you know, people didn't want to come to our crew. But then when they would come, we knew they had fun. Because we had so much fun on our crew. That was the first time I ever had fun, was with that captain and that crew. Because he was fair. I got to drive the fire engine. Like, these guys, they never let me drive. Same with Bev. I want, you know, how I told you, I love that equipment when I first took the tour. I hardly got to do that. I didn't get to be on that vehicle that much. And I didn't. They didn't let women drive the trucks, the bigger ones that are even longer with the huge ladders on top. If we did get to drive, the truck's considered a big man vehicle. And the engines are the ones that carry the water and have hoses. And women sometimes could drive that, but usually not. But my captain, one day when the driver didn't go to get gas when he wanted to, he said, Jacobson, you're driving today. And from then on, I was in the rotation. And so that's how I was able then to be an officer later, because I had experience being a driver, because my captain did that. And he should have done it, because I'd go get gas if he wanted to go before the shift started. You know, I wasn't going to argue like this guy. He was like, come on, I'm having my coffee. And I would be like, yeah, I'll clean it right now. That's what I would do. You know, I would do whatever, because I want to do a good job. I was getting paid for that.
Right.
And so, and that's just how I did. And that's how a lot of us did. Not just regular. We did double. You know, we wanted it to be really good so that people wouldn't find, you know, something wrong anyway.
Was it stressful to have to do
that? Yes. And that's one reason I was telling you before I didn't finish that. I was, I kept my book for notes.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't always remember it. And then maybe late, and I never wanted to have, you know, do something. I mean, what if you actually did do something wrong? You know, like that was just lived in fear, and I'd be laying in bed thinking, oh my God, what if this happened? What about that? And all the way along, once I was a driver, I'd think, what if I had a call where I had that one picture downstairs where I have me with hoses, and I was pumping into all these other things. I was the engine operator, and I had to know, like, what was going here and what was going there. And that was my first time, it was on State Street, that I had to know what. Like, that was kind of one of those things I laid in bed worrying about. How am I going to do all that? And somebody came by and said, because I had all the stuff in my head about numbers and pump operation, and this one should have 144, and this one should have that. And somebody said, you can see up there. You know, it's just, you can also just see if it's a good stream. One of them, anyway. Some of them you can't see because the hose is going away. All you know is this gauge here. And the person has to have water. And you have to do it right, or they can't control it. And so... there's a lot of pressure. And so here the real thing happened, but it was okay because I had trained and I practiced and I kind of pictured like what different things could happen. And so it was stressful. But another time I was on the squad, it was called, and it was that vehicle that carried all that cool auto extrication equipment. But we were on it by ourselves. One person having to find your way at night somewhere around the whole city if you got a call.
All by yourself?
Yeah. And so it changed. But one night, I got a call. I was the one on the squad because I was at the downtown station. And I got a call to go to such and such. And I knew I was on the squad, so I go down and I look at a map first. And I'm like, okay, it's kind of here. And I think there. And All right, and I have books, because at the time there's not navigation or anything, so I have books there too, but you don't get to like stop on the side of the road and look at your book or whatever. And I got close, and I was really mixed up. I thought, this isn't it. It's Cottage Grove Road. I'm not familiar with that area. I'm not sure I'm there. And I think I tried to look in the book just for a second, you know, but I sort of pulled over, and there was no traffic, and I was just in a panic, because what I didn't want to do, which is what I should have done, was tell dispatch I didn't know where I was going, uh-huh, and to tell them. But I didn't want to tell them, because
right,
I was then a failure, you know, and I was like letting everybody down, and they were going to talk about me and on. I keep hitting that, so that's not good. And so I don't even remember exactly what happened, but
wow,
I took too long to get there, and nothing bad happened because of that particular thing. Like, mm-hmm, whatever had happened, happened.
Uh-huh.
It didn't matter, which was lucky, because what if they needed, you know, the jaws? Because mm-hmm, that, I think that's when the jaws was still on there. But anyway, by the next morning, everybody knew that I got lost in the squad.
Really?
In the whole fire department, they had to call in the middle of the night somehow to tell, or get calls and talk to people or whatever. And it spread all around. Almost all of us have something that happened like that, because you're going to make a mistake,
wow,
at some point. Especially,
but when you made a mistake, the entire fire department knew about it.
Not just me, but even the other women. Like,
or
once Bev had a little thing with a fire engine where she went over a curb or clipped something a little bit, which happened all the time to guys.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're really weird to drive at first.
Right, I'll
and
bet.
Hopefully you try not to hit stuff, but people also help you and say things. And with us, they just like, there you go. Nobody was running out to tell me how to get there necessarily. You know, or my buddy, whatever, you know, like... It could have been different, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have felt comfortable enough to say, I don't know where I am, you know.
Right.
I'm not that good at the, you know, this particular thing. I'm easy to get lost, and I don't know that area or whatever. But I would just study like crazy, hoping I knew everything, and I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got lost. And it got talked about for a long time. But eventually the rule changed, because it wasn't right. Two people should be on there.
Yes.
One to
yes.
navigate and the other to get there. And there's a lot of work to do. One person knowing all that equipment.
Yeah.
I mean, that equipment's interesting, but there were millions of things to do.
Wow.
And hook up to power and, you know, I mean, when I was on that squad, I would spend hours like going over all the equipment, making sure it was perfect, running. I remembered how to use it. Stressful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially because I'm handy, but it's not like I love knowing how to do a hydraulic whatever. You know,
mm-hmm,
I'm actually a little scared of batteries and, you know,
mm-hmm,
car stuff, and that's not my thing.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, I would sometimes be like, okay, I'm a firefighter, but I hope that doesn't blow up, you know? And it probably isn't even a thing that would blow up, but, you know, that's just in my nature to kind of be like, a little cringy about
uh-huh,
it,
uh-huh,
especially when I didn't really get to admit it early on.
Right.
So somebody, Marsha, would explain a lot of stuff to me, and she'd
mm-hmm
say, okay, it's this is this, and you know, here this was connected, and so you don't have to worry,
mm-hmm,
and okay. Well, she had a double dose. She had the firefighter training, and she was a farm kid,
uh-huh,
and farm kids had a good amount of exposure to equipment, and so that was cool, so...
Is there anything else, thinking back on your time in Madison? Is there anything else that you want to talk about or that you remember?
There's probably a lot, but that's a lot already.
Yes, it
is. I used to love riding my bike to the fire station.
Yes.
I just loved it. And it's a beauty of Madison. And also that the firefighter union over time got the schedule to start at 7 in the morning. So it's before there's traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be riding my bike and there'd be a sunrise by the lake. And I'd get to the fire station and the first thing you do is check your gear out. And I would be so happy.
Oh.
Just because I just ridden my bike and, you know, like,
yes,
what a way to start your day.
Yes.
And then, you know, in the morning when I was kind of tired or whatever, the next day, I'd be riding my bike home. But it just was a good transition.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh,
so, and I liked in a way that I had that such a unusual situation with the people that I came on the job with, because it's forever a special bond with
mm-hmm
them. And
mm-hmm
I can kind of get pulled back sometimes into some of the negativity, but I also even have made peace with some of the guys that I didn't even mm-hmm. either like or even know or even care that much for in a general way, because mm-hmm. either I've worked with them over the years or I've talked to them at times. But the friends I made, the really close women are my lesbian sisters, mm-hmm. and even the women that weren't the lesbians but the feminists too were just great. You know, they'll always be, I would just mm-hmm. do anything for them, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, they're amazing people. And that's just, it's just, I'm so honored to know those people still. Mm. And also to have had such a cool job. I mean, uh-huh. Uh-huh. it was a cool thing to be able to say I'm a firefighter. And yes. even I can still say it, you know, because mm-hmm. I did it. And it's a neat thing. Mm-hmm. And so even though I didn't stay for all that time, I had a better and better time the longer I was there.
Uh-huh.
And uh-huh. and it's given me a lot. It gives me the life I lead even now, just because there's a pension involved.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and you know, all that experience with all those people.
Yes.
And it was a diverse group.
Yes.
Our group was diverse, which wasn't always true in the circles I ran in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
and what I've realized, they'd always say how it's this brotherhood and it's a family, and I'd feel like, I don't really feel part of the family unless it's a very dysfunctional part. But even now, going back to this reunion that I did for 30 years, mm-hmm. it is a family. Mm-hmm. And there are some things that are dysfunctional that you could work on. But also, there's really special ties mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm.
And that even though I haven't been there for a number of years, I'm still part of it. Mm-hmm. I'm still part of the stories. They're still part of my stories, my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. It's really cool. It does feel family-like that way. So...
What a wonderful legacy.
Well, thank you so much for asking, Pat.
Thanks, Pam.
It's been great.